Sofa with Victoria, where authors and industry insiders discuss everything from serial killers to series fiction. I'm Victoria Selman, author of the Zeba McKenzie Criminal Profiler series, and each fortnight I'll be unpicking the latest trends and themes in crime fiction with a panel of household names and rising stars. Today, I'm on the sofa with S.J. Watson and Alex Michalides to talk about psychiatrists in crime fiction. Welcome, guys. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, great to be here.
Yes, hi.
Hi, good to have you. Steve, I've just been talking about your fantastic book before I go to sleep on the Crime Time Best Books of the Decade debate, which was fantastic. Such a brilliant book. I read it years ago, but it's one of those books that really stays with you, isn't it? You still have people coming.
Definitely stayed with me.
Yes, well, exactly.
Well, thank you for that. That's a lovely thing to say. Thank you very much.
No, not at all.
It was a bit of a shock, but yeah.
A bit of shock to be talked about on the debate.
No, a bit of a shock. I suppose, I'm thinking about when I wrote it, 11, 12 years ago now.
Was it that long ago? Wow.
Is it that long ago? Gosh, yeah. It stayed with me too. I read it about that time and I've never forgotten it.
Yeah.
Oh,
thank you.
No, it's...
That's ironic. You've never forgotten it, given.
Yes. Oh, very good. Yes. Puns on a Monday morning. Fantastic. It's funny, isn't it? Because there's been such a plethora of sort of amnesia related crime novels since. But yours was pretty much the kickoff for that, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I know. I invented the genre. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I suppose it sort of ushered in a new kind of era of that kind of book. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Accidentally, I did sort of maybe kickstart something, but I didn't invent anything.
Did I hear? I mean, maybe I've completely dreamed this one up again. No puns intended. But did the idea come to you from an obituary or something? Did I read something about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah. I was reading an obituary of a guy called Henry Blazon who died. Obviously, he died, but he'd recently died, and he'd had amnesia for his entire life. So he was unable to, as a result of an operation. This one, to try and help him with epilepsy.
Right.
Yeah. So he died at sort of 86, and with no. With having spent his entire adult life being able to form no memories, and I just thought that must have been so, you know, well, strange doesn't really do it justice. So like disconcerting and weird and disorienting, to say the least. So yeah, it just kind of struck me.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I guess amnesia, it's almost like you lose a part of your identity, don't you? Because we are our memories. I can't remember who said that, but it's true, isn't it? And so when you don't have that, do you lose part of yourself as well, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The unintended, perhaps, theme of the book, in a way. I started to write it just as a story, you know, of a character study originally, and then it became a psychological thriller. But yeah, the more I kind of worked on it, the more I realised how fundamental memory is to us, because it's our autobiography, you know, and you know, all of us, hopefully at least, can, you know, we know our own story, you know, we know how and why we came to be where we are right now, and we know the good bits and the bad bits. And I just thought without that, it just must be just really, really difficult to live.
Yeah,
I think that's why it's so haunting, you know, because I think it transcended just like a thriller and ended up being kind of an existential piece, you know, which is what you're kind of saying about memory and identity and all that kinds of thing, which I think is why people responded so strongly to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alex, with you, you've got your second book's just come out, The Maidens, which is just as brilliant as the first one, which I could not put down, along with a million other people. It stormed the stage, didn't it, last year? What a brilliant success story. But in both books, what's so interesting, of course, is psychiatrists play such a prominent role. And you yourself are, I don't know if the terms are interchangeable, are they? Psychologists, psychiatrists, can you use them in the same?
They're not, actually. I was neither.
That's blown half my questions away now.
I studied psychotherapy, but I quit my training before I graduated. Before I qualified. Because I realised that I was a writer, but also because I realised that I have a very ambivalent relationship with therapy and with therapists. The problem was that while I was training and while I was working in a psychiatric unit, I kept meeting a great number of really, truly talented, fantastic therapists. But then I would also meet an equal number who were completely as crazy as the people they were trying to treat. And I just thought that I'd never really kind of seen that written in a way that I never saw a therapy session, or like even The Sopranos, which I love deeply. Mm. It didn't resemble a therapy session that I'd ever been in. And so I just thought I wanted to try and bring a bit more of a troubled psychotherapist to fiction. And I also, developed that bit with the Maidens, but with group therapy as well. Mm. But to answer your question, the difference is being able to, a psychiatrist is a medical doctor, and so they can prescribe medication.
Right.
Whereas psychologists and psychotherapists are not able to do that. I think that's the biggest difference.
Right, okay. But both obviously dealing with the human mind and how to, that's interesting.
You can cross over as well, obviously, because the psychiatrist can also be a psychotherapist or a psychoanalyst.
Yes, okay. Gosh, all the different terms, it's confusing, isn't it? Yeah. Do you find, I guess my question was going to be this, and maybe it's still relevant from having, from what you did study and from what you have seen. You often hear police, don't you, talking about crime novels and how they get very cross because authors, play with the truth, they might say, or don't get the technical details right. With what you've seen, do you find that something in fiction? Is that something that bugs you when people don't get that role right, the relationship between the... Can I please just use the word psychiatrist? Psychiatrists and patients. I'm going to tie myself in knots otherwise.
I think it's interesting. It just, you kind of, the cliche is that they always end up having sex with each other, the patient and yes, the psychiatrist or the therapist and stuff like that. So there were certain things that I just thought it would be nice to try and treat it more realistically.
Yes. And that's something I loved about your books. I mean, you talk about the transcript sessions. I mean, that conversation. And so I think using dialogue is so interesting, isn't it? Sort of the way it can bring a book to life. And of course, I might have got this wrong. You were a screenwriter as well. Yes.
Yes.
I have got that case. Note to self, check bios more carefully. That must have impacted, I guess, as well, the writing in terms of how much dialogue and movement in that sense there is.
Sure, yeah. But I'm sure Steve would agree that all writers are influenced by film these days.
Yes.
I think it's very much in our DNA.
Yes.
I find it really difficult to watch film now without analysing it, which is sort of a bit depressing in a way. Well, if it's a really good film, I can just lose myself in it like anybody, I suppose. But
yeah,
do you find that, Steve, as a writer? Do you find, because you've written more than me, do you feel like you can't switch off when you're watching other people's writing on TV or a film? Or...
Yeah, I read a really good quote. I think it was Jeff Dyer who said the thing about being a writer is you're always at work and you're always on holiday, and it's kind of true.
Always on holiday. I'd like that. I missed that bit up.
it's like, I don't know about you, Alex, but because I love what I do, it's on the one hand, it sort of doesn't feel like work a lot of the time. Mm. But on the other hand, it does feel like even when I'm on holiday, I'm still taking it with me. I can't really switch off. So.
And the guilt never goes away. So you never really fully enjoy the holiday either, because you always feel like, oh, I should be writing . And that's why I like documentaries or non-fiction shows, because they're the only things I can really relax and enjoy, because it doesn't make me think, oh, they're doing a better job than me, or I should nick that idea or whatever.
Trying to learn. I wonder if that's why as well, I don't know if you guys find this, but when I'm in the middle of a draft, I can't read properly. It's like I feel completely stupid, but I can't take anything in. And I almost, if I'm going to read anything, it has to be out of genre. So something completely different to what I would normally write. I wonder if that's sensitive.
I don't know. I think when I wrote Before I Go to Sleep, I didn't read anything, and that was really difficult. So I do now. But the thing I do is I always have I always tell myself if I've got a notebook near me and a pen when I'm reading, then I can call it work. It doesn't matter if I don't make any notes at all, if I don't write anything down, but just having it near me means I can call it work. So
yes.
Yeah. I find that I can't quite read other writers when I'm writing a draft, because I just end up copying their voice.
Mm.
It's really important not to do that or get influenced too much.
And if you read something too, I don't know if it's the same for you, but if you read something too good, you just think, oh, what the hell am I trying to do this for? It's just rubbish.
That's the biggest danger. Totally, exactly.
Well, taking it back to the psychiatrist and honing in on that a little bit more. And it's interesting, isn't it? Talking about ourselves, or rather yourselves and other writers as well. What is it about the psychiatrist character? I mean, you've touched on it slightly, Alex, from the personal perspective, but what is it that readers find so compelling? Why? I mean, because we really do, don't we? If you think about some of the big characters like Hannibal Lecter, for example, who is, of course, a psychiatrist stroke psychologist, she says warily. What is it about that character that we love so much?
It's a really good question. I don't know, maybe it's a little like a priest. I really don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think it's tough. I think we like the idea of someone being able to give us answers, I think, and sort of be like a teacher role, a guru. You know, we're all attracted to somebody who is learned and can give us information about ourselves.
Mm.
And yet at the same time, it's a very intimate relationship. It's very open to abuse.
Mm.
And so I think that's the kind of the knife edge that attracts writers anyway. Mm. I don't know, Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, yeah, from a sort of personal perspective, I mean, I have a therapist and sort of I have conversations with her that I have not had with anybody and wouldn't have with anybody else. So it is a very, yeah, it's true. It's a very intimate relationship and yet also a very clearly, well, should be anyway, a very clearly delineated one. And I suppose that's what's intriguing about fiction is it's an opportunity to explore what might happen if that very structured relationship kind of spills over and becomes something else. But I also think people who like psychological thriller, I mean, I think people are really interested in psychology generally, aren't they?
Yeah.
People fill in those kind of questionnaires in magazines and online now and stuff, you know, about which Harry Potter character are you, or, you know, which brand of ice cream would you be if you, you know? But I think people liked, and also you're talking about Lecter, and I think it's interesting people like to understand villains. They like to understand, or even not just the villains, just characters with motivation and trying to get into their head and understand. That's what fiction can do, of course. But
So
I think it's all kind of tied up with that, and especially with crime fiction. And
so it's almost the unpicking, it's taking that step further. So it's almost, isn't it? Well, like, you know how books you see somebody's internal thoughts, obviously read about somebody's stuff. But I guess with the psychiatrist, you're not just seeing that, but you're also going beneath the surface of what, not just what those thoughts might mean, but are they really the thoughts they're having? Which is quite interesting as well.
And I think you're right. The interest in self-help is certainly a big part of it. I can't tell you how many people who've read my book have said to me, oh, I don't like thrillers generally, but I really liked your book because I got a lot of stuff out of it. It was like therapy based. And so I think it's that crossover of, you know, we're interested in understanding characters and understanding ourselves. And, you know, therapy is a really kind of good medium for that, I suppose.
But your book was interesting as well from that. I mean, comparing it to a lot of other crime novels, there wasn't the gory element that I think you see so much. So it was all in the mind almost, wasn't it? Which was, to me, what made it so intriguing, I think.
Well, I love things like that. I love psychological thrillers, like really old school classic ones like Gaslight. And if you've seen that, Ingrid Bergman, that's such a great movie. And, you know, all that, which, you know, it's much more, for me, much more powerful if it's a... I mean, didn't Hitchcock say that the horror should take place in the mind of the audience?
Yes.
So it's all that kind of stuff, which I think is really classy and appealing. So
it's taking that little, one step removed. And I guess as well, I mean, there's also the sort of the narrative elements as well. Of course, using a psychiatrist is handy, isn't it, in terms of uncovering secrets and that sort of thing, which is interesting as well.
Mm.
So if you had a favourite psychiatrist, should I say that again? If you had a favourite psychiatrist in fiction, who would it be? I mean, for me, it's Lecter all the time, just because he's such a Venus character. But so
favourite? Would you like to go on a holiday with him, though? I mean, you know,
would I? Well, I'd be pretty scared, I think. Yeah. Yeah, his knife and fork, I'd be worried.
Yeah. Wouldn't want to be on a desert island with him because you might end up at lunch. Yeah.
Oh, don't jump ahead. That's my question for later.
Sorry, I thought we crossed over to that. We can cut.
No, it's my end question.
Okay. I love Hannibal Lecter too. I don't think anyone would give a different answer to you about that. I think everyone. I think he's the most famous psychiatrist in fiction, and so he's the first one that comes to your head. So.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it, that he's such a horrible person. I mean, he's not a nice person in any sense, but what is it about him that makes him interesting to us? It's not surely not just because he's learned and cultured and everything. It's got to be
a great achievement, that character. I really think so, you know, because it's like Tom Ripley in terms of Mr. Ripley. It's like, you know, it's a villain that we somehow are fully on board with and support, and God knows how they did it because it's brilliant.
And I mean if you think of the end of the film Silence of the Lambs, you know, Lecter is about to go off and chase, I can't remember the guy's name, the person who ran the clinic.
The asylum keeper. I can't remember what he's called. He was
a kind of loathsome person, but he wasn't that terrible. He hadn't eaten anybody. He hadn't, you know. And yet we're rooting for Lecter to catch him.
Yes.
How do you do that? How do you create that kind of, you know, like you said, Alex, this sort of sympathy and getting behind such a monster. I mean, he's a monster, yet he's a monster we kind of love.
Because it's funny, isn't it? Like for most other books, you almost, to do that, you have to see the internal thought and you have to have, they have to have, you know, the save the cat bit about them. But there's nothing like that about Lecter, is there? I mean, apart from the fact that he's just brilliant, and maybe that's all it is. Maybe we're simply attracted to his brilliance.
His brilliance is so intense, yeah.
Yeah, he's not just a kind of a gibbering psychopath who with bloodlust. I mean, he's that partly, but it's also the classical music and the Latin and all that kind of stuff,
and the Sherlock Holmes aspect to him, that he's able to, with a kind of intellect that we can only kind of, you know, just admire, is able to kind of pick up really insanely detailed things about people and you know, and solve murders, and so it's sort of, there is a, it's the genius aspect, I think, which makes it so
I think you're right. And yet it's funny, isn't it, because he's been so copied, and yet somehow when you see him now copied in other books, it doesn't work because he is a copy. So I guess the original element has to be a part of it as well. So Alex, we talked about why you chose a psychiatrist. Steve, how about you? What was it particular? I mean, I guess in a way it just works so well with Before I Go to Sleep. I mean, it's a natural fit, isn't it, that the character with Christine would need to have someone to sort of help her unpick what's going on. Was that the thinking, or was there something particular
Absolutely
about
that? Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I started the book without any real plan, to be honest.
Really?
I mean, I was doing a writer's course at the time, and so I'd read this a bit and got the idea for the character, really, and the situation, and I did sort of know the ending, or you know, the truth about the person she lived with. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler. Anyway, although let's face it, it's 10 years old, so probably everyone who's going to read it has done.
And if they haven't, they should. So.
I didn't have a massive plan, and so I just started writing, and I kind of went around in circles for a long time. I think for a long time, I wasn't sure whether it was going to be a sort of character study of this person living with this man. And then I just thought, it needs a story. Mm. I mean, my classmates on the course, we used to joke because there were endless scenes in the first draft of Christine, the character, doing laundry, making another cup of tea, and peeling a banana, because I said, what can she do, you know? I needed something to kind of, you know, kind of be a smoking gun, or to sort of drop a grenade into the novel, really. So I thought, how about this other person?
Oh really, that's interesting. So that's how you came to it, the idea.
And I mean, I think, you know, it needed
a detective figure in a way, right? Kind of.
And best friend as well, I guess, rolled into one. It's that sort of the ally as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, an ally. I needed an ally, and it needed an ally. I needed an ally who would be trying to help her unravel the situation, rather. And so, you know, it was natural that it was a sort of medical, psychological.
So you're doing it too good. It's not just me. We're going to say psychiatrist, Alex. That's going to do it.
I suppose it could have been a detective, but
it worked though, didn't it? For what you were,
I'm too scared to get it wrong.
Yes, but that was my point at the beginning, wasn't it? It's real. But what was interesting as well, and I don't know if it's deliberate or not, maybe it speaks to your attitude to psychiatrists, as Alex was talking about in terms of his ambivalent relationship with them. There's also that element, because of course with Christine, you don't know who to trust. You don't even know if you can trust, you know, she can't trust her own mind, so you don't know who, you know, who outside it you can trust. And so of course, as a reader of crime fiction where you're suspecting everybody, of course the reader suspects at points the psychiatrist as well. I can't remember his name, sorry, what was his name?
Nash.
That's right. Okay, Nash.
I can't remember his first name. I think it was Ed.
Let's call him Ed. Okay, say it with confidence, and that's what it will become. So yes, this whole kind of this trust element, playing with that is also sort of something on some unconscious level that you think you feel maybe towards psychiatrists generally. Is there that question of how far can you trust someone who is delving into your mind, that you're opening up to that much, you're becoming that exposed to, aren't you? Or is that just me?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I haven't really. I suppose in fiction I've thought about that, you know, but sort of assume in real life all psychotherapists are lovely people who've only got their patients' best or their clients' best interests at heart. Of course, no one's going to be doing anything like that. it's an interesting one.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you ponder.
I think a lot of it's the genre as well that we both operate in. It's so, you know, that you have to on the one hand, you have to be, you know, telling a true realistic character study. But on the other hand, you have another hat, which is the crime writer's hat. And so you have to always have this kind of, every character has to be on some level slightly bit shady, you know?
Yes.
It's part of the game, isn't it?
Yes. Absolutely. And of course, psychiatrists, like we were saying, work really well for that, because I guess, again, it's the whole look over your shoulder. You know, it's everything's happening in the person's mind. And in some sense, the person you're trusting the most is also the person you trust the least in a way, I guess. Yeah.
Weirdly, I mean, I was thinking about Spellbound by Hitchcock. And for me, that's such a disappointment, because I've seen it several times and I think it's just one of his worst films. And you'd think he would be the right person to write a really fantastic kind of psychological thriller, and it's not. It's clunky and old-fashioned and doesn't work at all.
I have not actually watched that. Tell us a bit about it.
It's about Ingrid Bergman and Gregory Peck.
Uh-huh.
And it's I don't want to spoil it, but it's got some good plot stuff in there, but it's just, I think the Freudian psychoanalysis speak is so old and clunky and bad that it just kills it dead. But I do think if anybody wants to get some good ideas to rip it off, I do think it's worth watching.
To rip it off with your notebook, so it counts as well.
Yeah, exactly. Watch a film with your notebook counts as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to the cinema. But that's an interesting point as well, isn't it? I guess in terms of the sophistication of psychiatric-based crime novels now compared to, as you were saying, however many years ago.
And maybe that's the interest that people have now, because most people have had therapy, or a lot of people have had therapy. And so maybe that's why more and more people are kind of into that as a genre, because they can relate to some level.
That's interesting. But also, I think crime generally is sort of moving into more psychological territory. I mean, we touched on this idea of understanding who people are and, of course, understanding monsters. I mean, it's a very boring crime novel that presents a villain but doesn't give you any sense of empathy for them. And so I wonder if we are becoming more sophisticated, and we are just interested in the criminal psyche and able to understand when it's done badly as well. I mean, those things just wouldn't work. I mean, you couldn't get away with half of that. There was another Hitchcock film. I can't think of the name, but I'm sure it's similarly done as well. Just very, so you feel like you're going mad. Yes, I think
Marnie.
Is that what I'm thinking of? Yeah.
A really dodgy psychoanalysis performed by Sean Connery on their honeymoon.
Yes.
There was another character who was a psychoanalyst, and then Hitchcock wanted to cut that, until he combined that character with Sean Connery's character. So he makes her husband into like a lay cod psychoanalyst. It's really bad, I think.
But that's the thing. We know now when it doesn't work. I mean, because we are. And I guess films open that up as well. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head, but Alex, probably you've got some better ideas than me a bit. But there are a number of films that do it so well now, and so subtly. It's almost that playing with our minds as well as the person on screen, I think, that works.
I do think they date, though. You know, I do. So, you know, like Psycho is another example where that end is an end coda, where the psychoanalyst comes on and explains it to psychiatrist.
Yes.
Something like, I was the other, you know, a couple of months ago, I rewatched Prince of Tides, which was such a massive movie at the time. And that was Nick Nolte and Barbara Streisand. And you watch it now and it's pretty bad. It's pretty schmaltzy, and the psychotherapy stuff doesn't work. And I think because we're rapidly becoming so much more psychologically minded and so much more sophisticated, that these things date, I think, really badly as well.
And I wonder as well, I mean, again, picking up on the technical side of it, I mean, we talked about the speech and the way it's actually done, but also maybe for us, we do need to be very careful about how we're approaching it, in the way that, you know, people, when they're doing police, I mean, I don't write police procedurals, and I always have so much respect for people who do, because the amount of research that must go into it. But they do, they have advisors, don't they, who read over the, you know, before it's even gone to your editor, they've got their police advisors. And almost, I wonder if it's going to come to a point where we need that as well. It's like, I mean, Bev Thomas, who I was talking to.
Yeah, I was going to mention that book.
Yeah.
It's a great book, isn't it? Sorry.
Really, really.
Gosh, I interrupted.
No, it is. It's brilliant. Yeah. No, but it's fantastic, actually. And of course, she's herself a psychotherapist. Mm. There you go. I used it properly. But you can really tell, can't you? Because it's not just the speak that she gets right, but it's the process and the terminology and all those things, how it just, you know, even just scattering a few of those terms just massively brings it to life.
Yeah. I mean, we should probably say it's called A Good Enough Mother.
A Good Enough Mother.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really good. And yeah, absolutely. You can sort of tell that Bev was a psychotherapist, but it's not done in a kind of overly, you know, she's not hitting us over the head with it. It's very much a novel, a story, but done very well.
Yeah,
I was really impressed with that.
No, I really enjoyed it.
I haven't read the book, unfortunately, but Big Little Lies and the scenes with Nicole Kidman's character and the psychotherapist. I thought or psychiatrist or whatever she's.
Yeah, that's really true.
We're just going to be stuffing ourselves at every turn now.
You know, because I think that's a lot of the time, that's what a psychotherapist is doing, isn't it? And in those scenes, we can see that she's a battered wife who needs to get out of her relationship. Yes. She can't. And the psychotherapist can see that as well. So it's kind of the therapist trying to lead her gently to that conclusion without
but so cleverly. So again, not telling the audience you are a battered wife, but gradually those questions may, and I guess for a reader, I mean that's you know, clear to us what she is, but I guess there are some novels or films or whatever where it's not quite so obvious what's going on, and almost using that relationship with the psychiatrist, having to piece it together with the patient. Of course, the reader's doing the same thing. So we're kind of having our hand held, but still
the puzzle. That's a really good example, I think, of a really good representation of therapy in Big Little Lies. But I've not read the book either. Sorry.
No. It was done. The adaptation was so brilliant. The other one, and I'm sure I've got the name wrong, but The Fool with, was it The Fool with Gillian Anderson? Have you guys seen that? Because that, of course, is brilliant as well. And it's, you know, from the slightly more police side of it, was, I thought, really interesting. And tell me, maybe you guys understand this, because I don't, and it's something I get, as you can tell, terminology and me don't have the best relationship. What is the difference between forensic psychology or psychiatry and the sort of criminal mind style profiling? Is there, because you hear that, don't you, or on the back of a book, it's like criminal psychologist so-and-so, but that's not the same as, Jason, what's his name from Criminal Minds, doing his bit?
I have absolutely no idea. So.
No, okay. Alex?
I think a forensic psychologist or psychotherapist works exclusively with criminals. I think a criminal profile helps the police catch them. So I think that might be the difference.
Okay. Okay, no, that's interesting. Brilliant. So, okay. So I guess one last question for the desert island question, which I know you're all desperate, as we've clearly shown, to answer. So we've talked about how, of course, we've used psychiatrists to uncover secrets and the insight into a disordered mind, which is absolutely fascinating because, of course, we are all armchair psychologists. There's also, though, isn't there, just the tying of threads together, I guess, as well. Do you think that's another role for a psychiatrist in crime fiction, just sort of bringing almost not quite a deus ex, how do you pronounce it, deus ex machina figure, but the sort of
I suppose there is sometimes an element, isn't there, of it kind of being the authorial voice?
Yeah.
Coming in and saying, well, of course, this is what's really going on, ladies and gentlemen, but, you know, so perhaps there's a sort of role for that.
Yeah.
In my case, because I didn't know anything about detectives. And my whole life I'd wanted to write a detective story, but I just thought it would just be crap if I'd wrote it, you know, because I don't know anything about procedure or anything like that. But I do know about therapists.
Yeah.
And so, I can have my therapist be a detective, and then it's a psychological crime that he's trying to solve.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing.
So it's whole right what you know as well, isn't there? And what
It is. And it's all about trying to find that kind of detective figure to put into a book when you don't know about detectives or police work.
Mm. I think writing detectives is really hard because... Yeah. So many people do, and there are so many of them around.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you make yours interesting and different from everybody else's?
Who has a drink problem and a failed marriage? Yeah. And exactly.
Yeah. I think Prime Suspect has a lot to answer for, really, because it sort of it was just so good and it was so iconic, and that whole idea of a troubled detective with a drink problem and your personal life and all that kind of stuff. And so now it's become such a cliche. So we're always trying to find new ways to reinvent it, which is really,
And is that your builder? We've been told before we started recording.
There's so much going on outside right now.
but it's interesting as well, isn't it? We've talked about how, you know, we've evolved. It's evolved as a genre and how it's becoming much more sophisticated. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because madness has been something that's preoccupied us, since Victorian times, when you think of, was it The Woman in White? And Victorian ties me in my history. But but it's changed, hasn't it? How? I mean, I guess that was more asylum-based sort of madness, would you say? Or
There's still something about madness that we love, I think, as readers. I don't think it's a bad comparison at all. I think Woman in White is still pretty cool now and still pretty haunting.
Yes.
So, you know, It's about having a great mystery, I think. I don't really know the answer to that. I don't know why madness is so fascinating to us all. Maybe because we're all a bit afraid of it and afraid of it.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe it's because it's a scary thing.
Mm.
Yeah. These books, the psychological thrillers of the type that Alex and I write, and they can be much more scary, I think, than sort of serial killers running around with ski masks on.
Yes.
Because the reader can imagine, well, that could happen to me. You know, I could end up with a husband who's, you know, wants to kill me, or you know what I mean? Kind of the danger that comes from within, either within the home or even within our own minds, and that can be much more.
That's a really good point.
Under the skin.
Yeah, danger than your. I think that's that, and that taps into what you were saying about the Hitchcock idea. What was the quote again? The monster.
The horror should take place in the mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, with the psychiatrist-based novel, I mean, that's exactly what it's doing, isn't it? I mean, it cannot do it more than that. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. So, okay. So here you go, the question. Desert island, not discs. If you had to have, and you're not allowed to say lecture, if you had to be on a desert island, a secluded desert island with a fictional psychiatrist, who would you choose and why? Steve.
Oh God, no! Don't. I would choose the woman from Big Little Lies because she seems really good and really nice. I'm sure we could have.
Aww.
That's a really good answer. I was going to use that answer if I may. I've got in there first. It's a really tricky question.
The same island and share her, perhaps. You know?
No, it's a secluded island. You're alone.
Oh, okay, right.
It's tricky because they're all so crazy generally in films and books. That's the tricky thing. I just have to very cheekily take one from The Silent Patient, who's called Ruth, and she's Theo's therapist, and she is a really good, kind person. And so
nobody's going for the flesh-eating cannibals.
No. What about you? Who would you go with?
Who would I go with? Oh God, nobody ever throws it back to me, so I thought I was sitting here fine. I don't know. You know, I think Gillian Anderson's amazing in The Fool, so I would definitely have her, even if just to have a chat about everything else that she's experienced. I'd love to sit down with her character.
Great.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much. This was a brilliant episode. Thank you very, very much for giving up your time.
That's a pleasure. It's been nice of me to talk to you both and meet you both.
Yeah, and ditto. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you. See you soon. You've been listening to On the Sofa with Victoria at Crime Time FM. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, rate and review on iTunes. And join in the chat on Twitter using the hashtag OnTheSofaWithVictoria, or drop me a line at Victoria Selman. I'd love to hear from you and hope you'll join me next time.